Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. Thank you, Jeremy, in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I appreciate it. It's always good to know that sort of thing. This ain't traditional terrestrial radio where you can have an air monitor. No. So we know we're getting out there, and we know that, among other things, that there's a new way of getting the podcast, just in case you're interested, over at Podbean. It is podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. And they'll go up, the podcast will go up there. So that adds to the list. Let's see, of course, the original home of the horn, whiterosesociety.org. And then, of course, there's Stitcher. And there's TuneIn. And there's Roku. And I think several other devices, and now there's Podbean. So help yourself any way you want to reach the get the recorded program. Of course, the single best way to get the live broadcast, which is what's happening right now. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. 2 minutes past the hour on this, the 28th day of July, 2015. This program is live, and so to get that, you still want to go to the Listen Live button at headonradionetwork.com. You can also listen live on TuneIn. You can listen live on Stitcher, and you can listen live via the link at whiterosesociety.org. It's all terribly, terribly, terribly simple. But just thought I'd let you know that we've added Podbean into the mix. The Titanic Tuesday, and with this Titanic Tuesday, a welcome to the folks who are already in the chat room ahead of me. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Texas T. Good evening, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, all capable and able long-term moderators of the Horn chat room. More folks will be wandering by, but, you know, got to ring the bell at the beginning of class, right? If you've never been to the Horn chat room, it is a great deal of good fun. And all you got, it costs you nothing. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click the tab, the chat room tab, and pick yourself out a password and a screen name, jump right in. And as long as you're not a birther, ninther, deather, tenther, bagger, bircher, booger eater, libertarian, Republican, we'll add in some forms of so-called independence as well, you'll be more than welcome in the room. Time vampires are not welcome. And Lottie and Betsy and Sparky are all more than capable of using the necessary lightsaber to bounce a right-wing ass right out of the space. So, good evening to the chat room. Let's see. Oh, the other thing. How we keep all this on the air. This is a listener-supported operation. It is, dependent entirely upon you. There are no advertisements here. There are no Buy Gold Now ads, no vacuum cleaner ads, no Swedish mattresses, no Bose Wave radios, no Snapple, no flooring from General Flooring, no steel buildings from General Steel Buildings, no, you get the idea, no herbal erection-inducing capsules. No. No, this program relies entirely upon your goodwill and your determination to keep independent media, independent broadcasting alive. It's alive. Yes. And toward that end, we try to raise $200 every evening. We have $800 to go in the week. And so, this evening, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4. That's about as far as I'm going. I will note that we also welcome people who choose to do a subscription and make their contribution, just set it and forget it, walk away once a month kind of thing. You have several different options, 5, 10, 25, 50, 100. Do we have, and then there's a box that says other. I don't think anybody's ever used other for anything above $100. But anyway, that's very helpful as well. So we're at zero. We get $200 to reach, or, you know, even $800, depending on how things work out. And it's Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday, of course, is dedicated to the Titanic intellects that comprise the right wing as it determinedly sails toward the nearest iceberg. And we have lots of options, lots and lots of options this evening. You may recall that Titanic Tuesday is so named after something that our buddy Jim heard many years ago over on local right-wing radio, the local, you know, 962nd tier right-wing blatherer was monotoning on one day when one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, knuckle-breathing followers called and said, "Steve, if Kim, you reckon it is that they is seashells in the rocks here in West Virginia, we ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which, in that inestimable monotone, Steve, no longer on the air, sad, sad, sad for us all, Steve responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And Titanic plates indeed, but still we have no word, no word whatsoever on the Titanic flower arrangement bowls. No, no, none whatsoever. So that's where it comes from, and that's and it just seemed at the time to be the perfect manifestation of the clueless and yet somehow snidely delicious way that the right wing goes about trying to prove its intelligence. And in point of fact, airtime snuck up on me this evening. It snuck up on me this evening because I was deeply engaged in examining a potential Titanic Tuesday nominee, to wit, Kevin D. Williamson of the National Review. We're about a week late getting to him, but I got to admit to you, I never read the National Review. It's the National Review, you may recall, is the same publication that way back in the heart and soul of the civil rights movement and the struggle for voting rights and the struggle to end Jim Crow and the struggle to simply be able to sit down and eat lunch at a lunch counter at Walgreens, for God's sakes. Well, it was the National Review who put forward carefully reasoned opinion pieces that said America just wasn't quite ready for those people to have full access to the civic process. Yeah, that National Review. And you know what? They haven't gotten any better. Especially, apparently, Kevin D. Williamson. And that name keeps ringing a bell. Kevin D. Williamson. And I can't help but think that maybe he's been a Moran nominee in the past. Or maybe he was a Titanic Tuesday twit. I think I know. But I want to find out for sure. Just checking here. And there it is! Yeah, I thought so! We would have to go back to early 2014. Yea, verily, more than a year and a half ago. But if you go back to sometime subsequent to January the 9th, 2014, that was the actual publication date, and we might have been engaged in things other than examining some blithering smartass right wing moron from National Review, because that was the day that more than 10,000 gallons of capitalism dumped into the Elk River and poisoned some 350,000 human beings in a 9-county area in West Virginia. The piece at the time was called The White Ghetto, or The Big White Ghetto. And it was, well, if you want to go back and search after January 9th, 2014, you'll find it there. But when I saw Kevin Williamson's name on this particular article, I thought, yeah, I recognize him. Oh, he's a barrel of Titanic Tuesday fun. Titanic plates and all that. I bet this is going to be a laugh riot because, you know, the last time we dealt with Kevin D. Williamson, who, interestingly, is a native of Texas, and said all kinds of crummy stuff about people from Appalachia, which we don't tolerate people not from Appalachia saying about us. We will say it about ourselves, but we will not tolerate people from outside Appalachia sliming us. No. You remember, this was the story about the woman who used her food card to buy buggy after buggy after buggy of Pepsi Cola, which she then sold on the Eastern Kentucky Pepsi Cola black market. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hillbillies saw him coming. And as is often the case, we made up a delightfully stupid story, which the credulous foreigner gobbled right up. Really? The Pepsi black market? I mean, it's Appalachia, not Afghanistan, okay? They deliver Pepsi every day all over Appalachia. And I haven't been keeping up with him, but apparently he's been busy, Kevin Williamson. Right. See, Gerald understands. He says, that's right, Bob. We can talk shit about our own family, but nobody else can. Isn't everybody like that? Yeah. God love her, bless her heart. She can't help it. She's like that.
Yeah, why, it sounds like you almost like the person, not that you dislike them.
So what we're talking about, and Paul, a member of our Horn Family Commune congregation, Paul, who is also a supporter of the program,
posted this on my Facebook page. Bernie's strange brew of nationalism and socialism. I have a feeling we're going to have a high old time with this. Because it's about it's about what a Nazi Bernie Sanders is. Yeah, really. It's online now. It goes back to the, I guess, print edition that ran on July the 6th. Datelined Marshalltown, Iowa, which for anyone who has ever scraped in the dirt on an archaeological site, the word Marshalltown has special meaning. Hi, Dr. John. And it starts out with some snark about liberals driving their foreign cars and about how Bernie Sanders is a, quote, confessing socialist from Brooklyn representing Vermont in the Senate who is in his half-assed and almost endearingly low-rent way challenging Hillary Rodham Clinton for the Democratic presidential nomination. Then let's see, he stands in right-wing slack-jawed awe that people have bumper stickers on their car that say things like peace and clean water is for life and the Warren wing of the Democratic Party and not just gay, ecstatic, because, you know, this is all funny to right-wingers. Peace is a joke to a right-winger. Getting along with people who aren't exactly like you is something approaching apostasy for a right-winger. The idea that someone could refuse to live in some sort of quaking shame over the fact that they're gay is, well, an abomination to a right-winger or a member of writing staff, scratching in mud with sharpened stick staff of the National Review. He refers to Bernie Sanders as a weirdo socialist from Soviet Ben and Jerry Stan. Oh, isn't our Kevin clever, clever boy. Describes him as a grumpy Muppet who spent too much time around the Workers' World Party back in the day. You know, that proves that Kevin Williamson is hip, because he can use a 15-year-old phrase from the popular vernacular like, back in the day. I mean, he's not terminally white or anything. Yo. And that's about as good as it gets, and gets worse. He says Bernie may not be the slickest practitioner of the black arts of electioneering. Talks about how it's not really that a lot of people are coming out to see Bernie, it's that Bernie's campaign people are smart enough to book small venues so it looks like an overflow crowd. Refers on second reference to Hillary Rodham Clinton, refers to Senator Secretary Clinton as herself. My, isn't he droll? Yes. Truly, after the Appalachia piece and this, we may have to craft some sort of a I don't know, styrofoam Titanic Tuesday trophy emblem iconic graphic thing of this neo maxi zoom dweeby's head as sort of the gold standard. Okay, not gold. Sort of the day-old bread standard of Titanic Tuesday infamy. And he goes on about how Bernie doesn't have a real campaign and Hillary's just going to stomp him and blah, 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 blah.
And let's see. He runs across an elderly woman who has a hammer and sickle T-shirt. Oh, noes! Not a hammer and sickle T-shirt. Booga, booga, booga. Commies! Because, you know, you can tell everything you ever wanted to know about a human being by their T-shirt. Because your right-wingers over to the National Review are nothing if not snap judgmental. I'm sure Granny wasn't wearing that, ironically. Not at a Bernie rally. I mean, I read this is nothing but it's nothing but strung together snark, and it kind of reminds me of the old. Do you know why Kevin Williamson wears a tie? Keeps his foreskin from slipping back up over his neck, over his face. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some of that stuff that the philosopher Jeff Spicoli is well known for identifying.
You dick!
Exactly. He then goes on to refer to the lady in the hammer and sickle T-shirt as Grandma Stalin. Yeah. But then the policy, politics stuff kicks in, and Kevin D. Williamson, chronicler of Appalachian soda pop black marketing. What a doofus. Begins to explain to us that actually the people who are following Bernie are a bunch of racists. Gerald inquiring, National Review? I wonder if it's affiliated with the National Alliance that William Pierce founded. I mean, the journalistic quality is definitely comparable, as is the general format of the publication. I don't think there's a direct line between dots kind of thing there. But, you know, certainly they are ideologically and philosophically and spiritually connected. But it turns out that people who are supporting Bernie are actually racists who are angry at somebody chained to a table in China because they're stealing our jobs. Let's see here. At some point in time, you may find yourself thinking, you know what I need right now? A hockey puck. And I can just bite down on. So I don't wake the neighbors, or bother the neighbors, or scare the cat. He says of Senator Sanders, he is in fact leading a national socialist movement. I've heard that somewhere before, that phrase. Which is a queasy and uncomfortable thing to write about a man who is the son of Jewish immigrants from Poland and whose family was murdered in the Holocaust. But there is no other way to characterize his views and his politics. See, I'm at a place where I don't trust Kevin D. Williamson if he tells me there's no other way to say something. Nah. The incessant reliance on xenophobic and largely untrue tropes, holding that the current economic woes of the United States are the result of scheming foreigners, especially the wicked Chinese, stealing our jobs and victimizing his class allies, is nothing more
than an updated version of, and I gotta tell you, wait a minute, we have not had one of these references in a very long time. Nobody, don't check the clock. Don't check the clock. This is not that. Victimizing his class allies is nothing more than an updated version of Kaiser Wilhelm II's yellow peril rhetoric. And though the Kaiser had a more poetical imagination, he said he had a vision of the Buddha riding a dragon across Europe, laying waste to all. Bernie's take is substantially similar. Fuck me! When? Has Bernie mentioned the Buddha riding a dragon across Europe? No, for pity's sakes. And then points out, Kevin D. Williamson, that Sanders and Jesse Helms both voted against the Clinton-backed China trade legislation. Well, that answers all questions, doesn't it? I'm sure no right-wing Republican and no progressive person have ever voted the same way on the same piece of legislation ever here in the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. This is what you call projection. All that right-wing filth that is actually believed by filthy right-wingers is projected upon, you know, us. Then there's a retrospective of the fact that before Made in China was a problem, Made in Japan was a problem. And then... this is a good one. Just to show that he is a member of the cultural literati, Kevin D. Williamson. Kevin D. Williamson, the exposer of the underbelly of Appalachian soda pop illegal marketing. Mm-hmm. Lets us know that he, even though he only recently got out of short pants, has seen Dr. Strangelove. We all remember Captain Lion Mandrakes. I'm sure that was a layout formatting problem, and Kevin D. Williamson never actually you know, typed Captain Lion Mandrake. Lionel, dipshit. We all remember Captain Lion Mandrake's account of being tortured in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. I didn't think they wanted me to say anything. It was just their way of having a bit of fun, the swines. Strange thing is, they make such bloody good cameras. You see, using a line from Dr. Strangelove proves that Bernie Sanders is a Nazi. Let's see. Sanders doesn't rail about the Canadians and Germans stealing our jobs. His ire is reserved almost exclusively for the Chinese and Latin Americans, as when he demanded of herself, see, herself, he can't say it three times or she'll appear right there next to him and eat his brain. Zombie Hillary. But for the emerging National Socialist, dusky people abroad are not the only problem, because they're at the National Review. They get all warm and fuzzy every time they think of people who are even a shade darker than, say, the corpse of William F. Buckley, who founded the National Review. Then there's the obligatory conversation that a UAW worker, or an earnest young man whose father worked for the UAW local hosting the rally, he spoke to him next to, they were standing next to each other in the restroom, because why else would you ever speak to Kevin D. Williamson if you're any kind of a progressive human being? I'm doing this as a public service. I hope you understand. Do not go and read this for yourself. It's a painful waste of your life. But the earnest young man whose father worked for the UAW local hosting the rally thinks that maybe we could try some of the German or Scandinavian social welfare state stuff. But no, Kevin D. Williamson, well, I mean, no. Because that leads to things like Pepsi-Cola black markets. The young man, Williamson said, is a great admirer of the German welfare state, saying, I ask myself, why do they have these nice things and we can't? I ask him to answer his own question, and his answer is at once familiar and frightening. Germany is very homogeneous. They have lots of white people. We're very diverse. We have the melting pot, and that's a big struggle. To which Kevin D. Williamson adds, Donald Trump has some thoughts on that. Right, because, you know, they have a monthly La Raza coffee klatch there at the offices of the National Review. You betcha. Yada, 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 Danish-style model, New Jersey, Texas, Mississippi, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, Bernie is damned with faint praise by comparison to someone named T.A. Frank, who wrote in the New Republic that progressives should oppose Obama's immigration reform plans. Because the foreigners will lower our wages. Funny, all those free trade agreements seem to be doing a lovely enough job of that as it is. And then there's an obligatory reference to some crazy progressive who doesn't like, who apparently doesn't like how right-wingers landscape their lawns. He then goes on to describe, and the Iowegians in the audience will probably be offended, here in a dreary, run-down, hideous little corner of Des Moines, dotted with dodgy-looking bars and dilapidated groceries advertising their willingness to accept EBT payments. Really? Grocery stores have to advertise that they'll accept the food card in Iowa? I thought it was kind of taken as read that that's where one spent one's food card monies, because that's the food card was previously food stamps, which one spent at the grocery store, even dilapidated ones near Drake University. And let's see. Oh, by the way, Bernie is a clumsy speaker. One of those rhetorical oafs whose only dynamic modulations are sudden shifts in volume. Let's see. He's the oratorical equivalent of every Nirvana song ever written. And he's undisciplined, and he talks for more than an hour sometimes, you know, because America doesn't have any problems that can't be sorted out in a 20-second soundbite. Now, does it? Do we? Let's see. Brothers and sisters, repeatedly, global warming, $15 minimum wage, putting it into free trade, gays, abortion, gays, lies about women making only 78 cents on the male dollar, mass transit gays and abortion and gays, Cokes and Waltons and hedge fund managers. Which is an attempt to be clever and sort of bogart the format of the spam, spam, eggs and spam, spam, ham, eggs and spam trope from, you know, Monty Python, because Kevin Williamson is so clever. And he's intellectually shallow. And
And his perceived enemies include the Walton family, who Kevin Williamson said, whose members are not particularly active in politics these days. And Tom Steyer, George Soros, Bruga Bruga, that has to go in there, or else they won't pay. They're paying, I mean, this thing goes on forever. They're paying the little bastard by the word. And then, of course, Williamson meanders back into the history of, and he has to bring out Henry Wallace, who was an avowed anti-fascist, who got bounced off of the ticket by FDR. Oh, let's see. Radical political language in the 1970s. I'm looking for bra burning in here somewhere, but I haven't found it yet. Oh, here's what pisses off Kevin Williamson. I knew it was there. And criminalizing things is very much on Bernie's agenda. Because, see, they're going to have... Kevin Williamson is probably sitting somewhere quaking in his boots over the prospect of being rounded up and sent off to an Obama FEMA camp at an abandoned Walmart somewhere in hot, dusty Texas. Beginning with the criminalization of political dissent. At every event, he swears to introduce a constitutional amendment reversing Supreme Court decisions that affirm the free speech protections of people and organizations filming documentaries, organizing web campaigns, and airing television commercials in the hopes of influencing elections or public attitudes toward public issues. You know why I had to write it that way? Because he can't say Citizens United. And by the way, according to this clown, getting rid of Citizens United, allowing infinite money from infinite cokes into our political process, that's the same thing. Well, he says it here. If the First Amendment enables them, then the First Amendment has got to go. Yeah, really. This didn't work any better from an argumentative standpoint when Ted Cruz was saying it. But that's right. Bernie Sanders is after your First Amendment. Let's see. Oh, there's one. He is a national socialist in the mode of Hugo Chavez. He isn't driven by racial hatred, he's driven by political hatred, and that's bad enough. Yeah. Yeah, I know, Devin, you're right. Get off my lawn, screamed Mr. Williamson. Only, you'd think he was, I don't know, maybe the Metamucil's gone to his brain. On and on and on. His views are totalitarian inasmuch as there is no aspect of life that he believes to be beyond the reach of the state. Interesting. I could swear it wasn't Bernie Sanders, but the Republicans who wanted to, who were opposed to treating people who love each other differently or love the same gender. I could swear it was the Republicans and not Bernie Sanders who were all about getting into bedrooms. And damn, am I wrong? Or is it the right wing? You know, the right wing that Kevin Williamson loves so much because he writes for National Review. Isn't it the right wing that wants to help those poor, brainless women's make their decision about whether or not to reproduce? And by help them make their decision, I mean not let them make a decision and force them to be pregnant
any time that the biology just happens to work out that way. And God knows if they want to avoid being pregnant by just say, oh, I don't know, loving a woman instead of a man. No! But Bernie Sanders is the totalitarian. And here, mercifully, is the end. Part of this is just a parting sentimental gesture from a daft old man. Occupy Geritol! Soupy feel-good identity politics for aging McGovernites. I'm not an aging McGovernite. I just want a country that can work again instead of fall apart at the tender mercies of the right wing like we have been since Ronald Reagan. But, you know, there's a little age shaming there, but that's okay over there at National Review because, well, yeah, Buckley. And dopey youngsters in Grateful Dead t-shirts. How old is this silly... Dopey youngsters in Grateful Dead t-shirts? I know some youngsters. I've got some. None of them have Grateful Dead t-shirts. And they're definitely youngsters. Generally, it's my demographic you find in the dopey Grateful Dead t-shirts because, well, you know, they look kind of cool. And who doesn't love that bear? And the skull with the roses. I mean, it's kind of iconic, right? Oh, but not to Kevin D. Williamson. That an outlier of a senator from Vermont wants to organize American politics as a permanent domestic war on unpopular minorities is, while distasteful, probably not that important. That herself, see, that's the third time, and he still won't say her by name because, well, you know, zombie Hillary, made the same speech in Des Moines a day later, on the other hand, is significant and terrifying. This clown apparently thinks himself some sort of right-wing Hunter Thompson or something. I don't know. But he's identified as a roving editor at the National Review. When it would save at least a little bit of ink and probably a few trees just to identify him as an idiot. Hey, how about a little Titanic Tuesday humor? So, a couple of guys are sitting at a bar. One of the guys is Mr. Wong. And he's Chinese. And the other gentleman is Mr. Goldberg. And they've been sitting there at the bar watching Fox News, and they're each older gentleman that they are getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And suddenly, Mr. Goldberg gets off his bar stool, doubles up his fist, and punches Mr. Wong right in the face, knocks him off the bar stool. Mr. Wong gets up, dusts himself off, and says, "What the hell was that for?" Mr. Goldberg says, "That was for Pearl Harbor." That's when Mr. Wong hollers, "Pearl Harbor, I'm Chinese! The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, not the Chinese!" Mr. Goldberg says, "Chinese, Japanese, what the hell's the difference?" Now, Mr. Wong gets back on his bar stool, and they start drinking again. They're down at the far end of the bar, you know. That's where the TV with Fox is. Mr. Wong all of a sudden stands up and just slaps the living bejesus out of Mr. Goldberg and knocks him off his bar stool. Goldberg gets up, kind of rubbing his jaw. "The hell was that for?" And Mr. Wong smiles inscrutably at him and says, "That was for the Titanic." "The the Titanic, shouts Goldberg. The Titanic was sunk by an iceberg.
Told you this is some Titanic Tuesday humor. Mr. Wong stares down his drinking buddy and says, iceberg, Goldberg, what the hell's the difference? Fletcher, Felcher, whatever. And this is why no one should watch Fox News. You see? Which makes for an interesting segue into this other little bit of Titanic Tuesday business. And that is the... And we touched on it ever so briefly last night. this business of Reverend Pastor Brother Governor Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckabee. And I think we... And it was interesting, over on the for-profit media this morning, it was almost as if someone had been listening to the horn, because it was like I said it here and it came out of their mouth there. Because the observation made here last evening, to wit, that the Republican Party has unleashed a monster of its own making, which it is now unable to control, forcing its presidential candidates into an ever-descending spiral of slimy scumminess in which one candidate has to say something scummier than the previous candidate in order to get the for-profit media to look at them and thereby hopefully run their percentage points a little bit upwards in the polls so as to qualify within the top 10 to be in the first debate next month. Well, that's what it is. And then, it all, and a large part of this centered around Mika Brzezinski, otherwise known as the Meat Puppet. Thank you, Charlie Pierce. I mean, Squintin' the Meat Puppet is quite the name. But Mika had a little bit of the fantods Monday morning, when the statement by Pastor Brother Governor Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckabee came to her attention. The original statement by Huckabee were made during an interview with the people over at that website that rhymes with light and fart and is roughly as appealing. And apparently it was really earth-shattering, moving television when Mika read it. So we're going to go to that clip. All right. Just for, well, from, well, you'll understand in a minute. I promise. We can do this. That, yeah.
We were just talking, and Joe, you're right. Here's the response that I have to Huckabee's comments. If you've been to Auschwitz, if you've been to Birkenau, if you've been to any of these places where people were killed, and you see the piles of...
Come on, Mika, you can do it. And we're apparently having problems with the clip. Well, what Huckabee said, which many of you know by now,
He said, "This president's foreign policy is the most feckless in American history. It is so naive." And by the way, this is not the first time a Republican has hauled out feckless. They've worked that word over a bit. "It is so naive that he would trust the Iranians. By doing so, he will take the Israelis and march them to the door of the oven." And so that's what Mika was responding to, and that's what the clip was a little bit of. Let's try again.
You're right. Here's the response that I have to Huckabee's comments. If you've been to Auschwitz, if you've been to Birkenau, if you've been to any of these places where people were killed, and you see the piles of glasses, the piles of hair, the piles of shoes, and the piles of clothes, and every bit of their humanity that had to be stripped away, handed over as they went, and then burned to...
Right. Okay. And burned to their deaths, among other things, it's really not a good comment to say. That's what qualifies as really being blistered by Mika Brzezinski on the for-profit media television. One, history, which matters. Unless I am mistaken, the ovens which are being referred to, and I don't think this is a distinction without a difference. The ovens which are being referred to were the crematoria, where the already dead bodies were disposed of. I think if you're going to work this analogy, what you want to say is, he will take the Israelis and march them to the door of the showers, because that's where the Zyklon B was used. You know, the Zyklon B, manufactured by industrial outfits controlled by Fritz Thyssen, which was in turn financed with the help of all the Bush family. You know, Brown Brothers Harriman. But who's counting, right? And as the write-up goes, "Oh, God," she said, sounding physically repulsed. "I had not read it until this moment, and I am horrified." So it's not just that there's historical inaccuracy on the part of Mike Huckabee, which we would expect, but Mika Brzezinski was actually educated at a good institution of higher learning, namely Williams College in Western Massachusetts, and not the Arkansas Bible and Bovine Husbandry Academy that, you know, Mike Huckabee attended. Arkansas Baptist Bovine Seminary. Herpetological sanctuary, right. So she repeats the same historical error. And I'm not trying to be snide about this, but it's probably a good thing when we're talking about the Holocaust to get the details right. Because otherwise it allows right-wingers, you know, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, the usual Republican, libertarian crowd. See, they can't even get their story straight. That's why we know that the Holocaust was a fraud. It was a hoax. That's where this stuff comes from. But there's more than that. And of course, Mika was not the only one manifesting outrage about this statement, and it is outrageous. But again, it's a product of something that the media and the Republican Party in conjunction have made happen. Because we must remember that the Republican base in this country is a nasty lot. A vile bunch of booger eaters. And the only way you can capture their attention is to be meaner, rottener, more vile, more callous, more crass, more hateful than the Republican they heard from previously. I gotta admit, this first Republican debate comes around, I'm going to be glued to the screen. I'm going to have a hockey puck and a vomit bucket, but I'm going to be glued to the screen. Because even now, paid campaign consultants are licking thumbs and flicking pages, trying to find the next shitty thing that will capture the attention of America's for-profit media industry. So there's the oven thing, one. Two, I guess, I mean, and she was choking up. You know, every bit of their humanity that had to be stripped away, handed over as they went and burned to their deaths, among other things. It's really not a good comment to say. It's a deal breaker, she gasped. It should be over for him. You don't say that. And by the way, if you said it by mistake, it's a sign of who you really are. That's all I have to say. You wanted me to say it on the air. I just did. And yet she didn't. Because as far as I can tell, and I haven't watched everything there is to be known about responses to this over-the-top bit of feckless, shameless race to the bottom, lowest common denominator politicking for which the Republican Party has become justly infamous. But folks are blowing by the actual thing. And upon reflection, I think the reason they're blowing by the actual thing is because it's become okay to say it. And that is that Barack Obama is another Hitler. Who had 6:58 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time? Who had 6:58 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time? That's our Hitler lottery winner for the evening. 6:58 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But that's what this is. The president's foreign policy, so the president is the subject of that sentence. No, foreign policy is the subject of the sentence. The president modifies foreign policy. The policy is modified by foreign and president. This president's foreign policy is the most feckless in American history. Well, I guess the word feckless came into English language existence sometime after, say, March of 2003, right? Kind of had to. Because, I mean, that was some pretty feckless stuff Dick Cheney was putting off out there. And you know, kind of sleazy rice. Goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. You know, and we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. And, you know, Colin Powell. And, my friends, this is not speculation. These are facts. Right. No fecklessness in that. This president's foreign policy is the most feckless in American history. It is so naive that he would trust the Iranians. By doing so, he, this president, will take the Israelis and march them to the door of the oven. That is a direct accusation or a direct comparison, a direct analog suggesting a one-to-one relationship between Adolf Hitler. I'm sorry, if you had 7 p.m., you lose. It was 6:58, damn it. A direct one-to-one correlation
by comparison, between Barack Obama and Adolf Hitler. And there's really not a lot of people out there, unless I've missed it, and if I have, I apologize. Not a lot of people out there pointing out the fact that, well, he just called Obama Hitler. Because it's okay to call Obama Hitler. Because they've been calling Obama Hitler for, 7 years. 6.5. Because it's what they got, and that's about it. So, to review, Mike Huckabee compared Barack Obama, who is in no way even remotely resembling of Adolf Hitler, either mentally, intellectually, ideologically, philosophically, spiritually, or God knows physically. And Mika Brzezinski, who is on that program as, you know, the liberal. Can't quite come up with, can't even muster up a molecule of indignance at the fact that this guy is going to get away with and actually be rewarded with a bump in the polls for comparing a sitting American president to Hitler. As the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith has noted, only Hitler is Hitler. But not to the right wing. Oh, no. And they've been at it so long that it's just become something we don't notice. And by the way, going on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. No, it was the Today Show. I'm sorry. No need to go on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda because, you know, that's like preaching to the choir. No, he showed up on the Today Show, Reverend Brother Pastor Governor. Diabetes snake oil cure salesman Mike Huckabee did, where he told Matt Lauer that no, he would not apologize because, by God, 42 years ago he went to Israel for the first time. And that, yes, he'd been to Auschwitz. And absolutely, the Israelis are threatened with extinction because we crafted an agreement with the Iranians to keep the Israelis from being threatened with extinction. So Mika Brzezinski was, by God, horrified. She just couldn't bother to be horrified for the person being compared to Adolf Hitler. Why? I don't know. But then again, she thinks that the ovens were the means of execution and not the showers. So, and so does Mike Huckabee. And God Almighty, who knows how many other millions of Americans now think that too? Well, why'd they give them showers if they were just going to burn them up to death? See, I mean, wouldn't wetting them down? So we've got that going for us. And that is titanic ignorance. It truly is. Titanic stupidity. And past stupidity, it also, well, it points up the fact that we really are kind of hurting for a basic historical understanding of the Holocaust. And that's not a good sign. Not a good sign at all. Because if we don't understand it, and if we don't understand how it happened, and why it happened, and the means by which it was perpetrated, then that makes more likely the possibility of it someday happening again. And that fills me with a sense of loathing and dread that I am scarce able to enunciate. Ron and Raleigh noting, "Hey, Bob, once again, you've taken a fine, upstanding, Christ-centered, yada-yada Republican out of context. He didn't mean it the way you took it." You know, except he did. I like the fact that we're now just... Wow, I didn't even get a Bob, Bob, Bob for that, Ron. I like the way that we've just turned a whole bunch of the litany into yada-yadas. Yeah. So here endeth the filibobster. There's more, believe me, but if you want to get in on the conversation. By the way, Kevin Williamson is, according to Ron, 42 miserable years old. His poor mother. Steve in New York, back to riding Buddha riding a dragon. Steve says, "Yeah, that was when Jesus was riding the unicorn." Back to the Bernie business. Steve in Vermont says, "Another letter to the editor. The right-wing propaganda machine seems to be trying to label Bernie a Nazi or extreme, ironic accusations." Here's the pull quote. "Bernie and American fascism. If you look up the definition of fascism, one of the definitions is corporate control of government." No, this is not a full quote. "One can have the debate whether this has come to pass already, hence I'll stop with the voice. But there are Republican candidates like Scott Walker, Rand Paul, and yes, I do worry about Hillary, who are in the thrall of the corporate billionaire class, and especially in the case of Republicans, quite eager to make their billionaire libertarian dreams come true. This would be a nightmare for anyone not insulated by major wealth. Bernie is essentially an FDR Democrat, and his agenda is essentially conservative, which means holding on to traditional attitudes and values and cautious about change. The change he's cautious about is right-wing extremism or libertarianism. Bernie wants to hold on to what we have and expand and protect those values. Labeling Bernie as extreme or unrealistic only clarifies how extreme to the right the U.S. has been dragged by right-wing ideologues and corporatists." Yeah. And, yeah, there's Vox also taking down the Kevin Williamson piece. Which pissed off Kevin D. Williamson. Oh, my God. Well, of course he's got a Twitter account. Randy asking, who was it who called the Today Show the B-Day Show? I don't know. I don't think that I'd ever heard that. And Ron and Raleigh's, if you thought Kevin D. Williamson was a horrid swine before, he's worse than you thought. Oh, dear God. It does get worse. This from Slate.com. You can go and look it up for yourself and read it at your leisure. How to dehumanize a trans person in 3 simple steps. Apparently, Kevin D. Williamson has also opined on trans folk, and particular trans folk, namely Laverne Cox of Orange is the New Black, described by Mark Joseph Stern in Slate as a strangely angry hatchet job. He continues to describe it as such a marvelously thorough polemic against treating trans people as people that it deserves to be studied in detail. Well, I think I'll hang on. I think I'll read this again at my leisure a little bit later. Yes. Thank you very kindly to Glenn in New York. We are off and running on fundraising this evening. We try to raise $200 every evening, and y'all are the only way this keeps going. And there are bills to pay every week. They don't go away. And, well, you know where the PayPal button is, right? It's under the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. I didn't give out the mailing address. If you want to participate by the U.S. Postal Service, shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I will then include that in the total and tell Boss Man Wayne that he need not be quite so fearful when he reaches into the echo chamber, the spider-filled echo chamber that is the Horn mailbox. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn can be sent to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And thank you, Glenn, very kindly for getting us started this evening. Yeah, I know. I know. Carol noting, these fucking stumps don't understand the meaning of the goddamn Confederate rag. And you want them to understand the freaking Holocaust? I know. I ask a lot. I admit it. I do. I do. Truly. But somebody gotta. Just gotta. All right. So being Titanic Tuesday, that means this year, 28th day of July, 2015, that means that we have the Green News Report on tap. So that's coming your way. If you want to get involved in the program, if you want to chat a bit, you know the numbers, I presume, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the stress line, named for the inimitable, gone but not forgotten, Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is simply Bob Kincaid Horn. And if you've never sent a contact, if you've never done that before, send me a contact request, and we'll be off and conversing before you know it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Hopefully, some more listener support will come in. Folks wanting to stand shoulder to shoulder with Gwen as we get started on trying to take care of what needs to be taken care of this very evening. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
But we don't know where we've been, and we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen, and we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to
It's Tuesday, July 28, 2015.
Not some homes, not most homes, every home in America.
Hillary Clinton pledges to go big, very big, on solar. Jeb Bush calls for eliminating all energy subsidies. Plus,
well, this is the biggest threat that the planet faces.
New study suggests worst-case sea level rise may be sooner than we think.
Fantastic. All of those worst cases and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Well, I'm not a scientist either. I'm just a grandmother with two eyes and a brain, and I know we're facing a huge problem from climate change.
Well, way to lose the one-eyed grandmother vote, Hillary. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I got to say, the fact that the candidates for 2016 are now being pushed to come out with climate plans, now being pushed to come out with answers, the answers are terrible, frankly. I'm not impressed with pretty much any of them. But at least the corporate media seems to be holding their feet to the fire this time around, unlike in 2012.
That's right. It is a whole new ballgame with the presidential campaign actually talking about climate change.
Imagine that.
So let's talk about it. First, Republican Jeb Bush called for eliminating specialized tax credits for all energy sources at a campaign fundraiser in Iowa over the weekend. He's the first Republican candidate to even mention oil and gas taxpayer subsidies enjoyed by the wildly profitable oil and gas industry. Now, while eliminating subsidies for all energy might sound fair, it's not actually fair at all. Oil, gas, and coal have enjoyed direct taxpayer subsidies for nearly 100 years and indirect subsidies like U.S. military protection around the world. They also get the biggest subsidy of all. They don't have to pay for the cost of their pollution. You do.
Yeah, I love the idea that, oh, we shouldn't subsidize anyone. We shouldn't pick winners and losers. Well, the winners in this case happen to be the most profitable industries in the history of civilization. And now Jeb Bush wants to pull up the ladder so no one else in any of these new energy industries, they just can't enjoy the same thing that fossil fuel did for 100 years or so.
Now, Hillary Clinton spoke of rebalancing taxpayer subsidies for energy in her first major speech on climate change, rolling out what she said was the first plank of a comprehensive climate policy on Monday in Des Moines, Iowa. Secretary Clinton says the U.S. can be the world's clean energy superpower by going big on solar.
We need to have more than half a billion solar panels installed across the country by the end of my first term. Second, we'll set a 10-year goal of generating enough renewable energy to power every single home in America. Not some homes, not most homes, every home in America.
So that's a pretty big pledge to make. It would be a 700% increase over current rates of solar panel installation. And she also wants to power all homes in the U.S. within 10 years with renewable energy.
Yeah, but I think I need to mention, if you talk to scientists, what she's proposing, at least as of now, is not nearly enough.
True. At that campaign event on Monday, Clinton declined to comment on the Keystone XL pipeline. Climate activist Bill McKibben said of Clinton's plan, quote, Hillary Clinton is halfway there. Now we need Clinton to show she understands the other half of the climate change equation, which he says is keeping it in the ground. As for Clinton's fellow challengers for the Democratic nomination, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley has actually gone even further. His energy policy, released last month, calls for the U.S. to be 100% renewable energy by 2050, as in no fossil fuels at all. Now, that is technically feasible with today's technology, but not with today's Republican Party in control of Congress. A disturbing new study now says that further delay in moving away from fossil fuels could unleash rapid sea level rise. That's according to a former NASA climate chief, James Hansen, who has co-authored a bombshell new study warning that global warming could accelerate extreme weather and rising seas. In an interview with CBS News, he said sea levels could potentially rise as fast as 10 feet in just 50 years.
If we get sea level rise of several meters, all coastal cities become dysfunctional.
And when he says dysfunctional, he means like, goodbye, Miami. In an interview with the Bradcast this week, climate scientist Michael Mann, who was not involved in Hansen's new study, says the study makes a strong case that climate change is proceeding faster and is larger in magnitude than previous predictions.
We have tended to underestimate the rate and magnitude of the changes. And he's put together a pretty compelling picture here of what a worst-case scenario might look like, and it's not pretty.
It's not pretty at all, and compelling is a very nice way to put it. Terrifying is the way I might describe it. For much more on that story and even some more encouraging ones, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime for free from Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I had no idea they were going to use Blondie, so that makes the Talking Heads and Blondie. I guess it's a CBGB's kind of evening. It's 25 minutes past the hour here on Titanic Tuesday at the Horn. 25 past the hour on the 28th day of July, 2015. And, yes, the lines are open, 304-574-8178, and the stress line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Let's see. What is it about nationally... Maybe I'm answering the question before I'm asking it. All it takes is a story of that goes viral, that goes national, that gains our collective attention. Collective communist! That brings out the worst in wingnuts. And by worst, I mean, yeah, really, the worst. I'm thinking in particular, let's see. Our good friend Texas T posted a little something on my Facebook page the other day. By the other day, I mean yesterday. And it is a statement, by a woman in Texas, of course, in regard to the Sandra Bland matter, which I think most anybody with one functioning brain cell, recognizes is troubling, to say the least. And in particular, what we're talking about here, over on the Facebook, there's apparently a creature named Heather Martin, who up until recently apparently didn't want to be a public figure, but then decided to be one by going viral. Her Facebook page features an outline of the state of Texas with the devil's diaper, the Confederate battle rag, superimposed across it. And a few days ago, she posted the following. Dear uppity, mouthy, and criminal Chicago travelers in Texas, if you get snotty with our Texas DPS, we will pull you the F out of your car and place you under arrest. That's exactly what we pay, all caps, them for. And if I see that go down, I will, all caps, back up
the officer every time. Do what you're told, and all caps, STFU. You're incredibly lucky you didn't get tased or your head blown off, just cause you decided to kill yourself later does, all caps, not make you anything other than a menace to society, as so clearly illustrated by the dash cam video, hashtag Police Lives Matter. I saw the dash cam video. Where's the menace to society part? But pasty-faced, white, doughy Heather Martin is going to be right there to back up a cop if he decides to get his red ass on over someone smoking a cigarette while being stopped on a bogus, trumped-up traffic charge. So there's that. Then there's Kansas City. Where Carol informs me that, in that city, the hotel supervisor of the Adams Mark Hotel, which is very near the, what was it called once upon a time, the Harry S. Truman Athletic Complex featuring Arrowhead Stadium and what is now Kauffman Stadium, which used to just be Royal Stadium. Well, the manager at the Adams Mark Hotel, and just, wow. Hung up a slave doll. Go figure, again, some more, to make sport of Sandra Bland. The white supervisor hung it from a doorway. An attorney by the name of Stacy Shaw posted an image of the hanging doll yesterday. It was hung up in the doorway of a break area in the hotel with a noose made from a plastic trash bag. Really? A worker at the hotel saw it and went to the lawyer with the photograph. There's no word on the worker and whether or not the worker was fired. The manager... Damage control, klaxons. The manager declared, "This is completely inconsistent with our hotel's culture." It happened. And immediately following the investigation, the employee was terminated prior to the start of their next shift. The Adams Mark Kansas City is committed to maintaining a positive work environment free of unlawful harassment. You gotta wonder, though. You think maybe, I mean, is it time for, say, corporations to make it abundantly clear that it's not okay to hang little slave dolls in slave doll lynchings on corporate property? Does that need to be sort of reiterated or expanded upon because white racist America doesn't seem to be able to get the memo? I don't know. Carol tells me that that hotel's about 10 minutes from her place of employ. I have a feeling that there's probably a lot, and it, you know, there's no place is immune. It's all over creation. A witness, for instance, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Elizabeth Hasselbuck, who is gamely trying to figure out what happened to Sandra Bland. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Welcome back. Well, the hacker group Anonymous is calling for a day of rage, encouraging people to take to the streets in protest over the death of Sandra Bland. She was found dead in a Texas prison 3 days after this traffic stop. Here, the video igniting a national debate over police tactics and whether the officer went too far. Bland's death was ruled a suicide. But if you examine the dash cam video, you ask, did the officer cross the line? Here to take a very close look at it is former NYPD officer John Rafferty. John, thanks for being here.
Thanks. Oh, I didn't, wait a minute, I didn't issue a hockey puck warning on this one. Trust me, you're gonna want it.
Let's dive right into this first part of the video here. This is when the officer pulls her over and explains why this is happening. Watch.
Hello, ma'am. Well, the Texas Highway Patrol, the reason for your stop is you didn't fail. You failed to signal your lane change. You got your driver's license and insurance with you? Can you give me a few minutes, all right?
What do you see here?
Basically, normal procedure. This happens millions of times throughout America. Normal procedure lets you know why you pulled her over properly. Went back to the car, you know, you'll see after this clip, and just runs the information just to verify.
Okay, so up to this point, standard procedure.
Absolutely.
This is part two when the officer comes back to the car and they begin to argue. Let's watch.
You seem very irritated.
I am. I really am. I feel like this crap is what I'm getting the ticket for. I was getting out of your way. You were speeding up, tailing me. So I move over and you stop me. So, yeah, I am a little irritated, but that doesn't stop you from giving me a ticket. So.
How are you doing?
What do you know?
And I know everybody's seen this video a million times. Are you done? So you're irritated. Why are you irritated? She tells him why she's irritated. Are you done? Which is cop speak for, thank you for giving me probable cause. Because I'm going to treat that like probable cause. If you had said you were not irritated, that too was going to be probable cause.
There.
The whole thing is this. I always took the approach where if you're going to write somebody a ticket, write them the ticket, move on. There's no benefit of interacting with somebody who's already hostile and upset. And unfortunately, we've developed a society that's more combative.
Yeah, because not only was Sandra Bland upset, which she admitted to being, she was hostile. Isn't it amazing? They not only have ex-cop experts on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they have mind readers. And this guy, this clown in particular, can read the mind of the dead. Hostile. Yeah, Marty, I think you're right. Marty says, I thought Elizabeth Hasselbuck was a hockey puck warning. Yeah, maybe redundant, but still, you got to give folks a chance, especially maybe the newbies.
And they're not willing to basically respect the police. and take that summit to fight in court. And that's really what should be going on.
Are you saying the moment you engage in debate, you're sort of instigating this sort of conversation?
No, it's a no-win situation. The person's already upset that they're stopped. They're going to be late for something wherever they're headed. They think maybe they didn't do anything wrong. But
They think maybe they didn't do nothing wrong. See? I mean, they think that.
Fortunately, the respect that goes back and forth, was kind of lacking here.
Okay.
Who was lacking the respect? I'm just curious here because I didn't hear disrespect in the tone of her voice. Of course, I'm also not a tone reader either. Mm-hmm. I wonder if she was being feckless. You might be interested to know that Jack in Shreveport ran over to the dictionary to check out feckless, being as how Reverend Pastor Brother Governor Diabetes Cure Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckstaby says that the president is feckless. And Jack informed me of something interesting. He said, I've been curious why the right wing uses the word feckless so often. My computer dictionary says lacking in efficiency or vitality. But which doesn't sound like no, I mean, no. But a further look shows alternative definitions that include irresponsible, shiftless, lazy, weak, and irresponsible. I think shiftless and lazy, says Jack, are dog whistles, while right-wingers would rather be led by an asshole than someone who is weak. Couldn't find any links to religion or politics, only definitions and synonyms. Feckless. Shiftless and lazy. But back to Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Three. Officer asks Bland to put out her cigarette, and the situation completely escalates. Watch.
You strapped in? Good. This is where it gets fun. Not the video, Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Titanic intellect on display.
You mind putting out your cigarette, please? Don't mind.
I'm in my car, but I have to put out my cigarette.
Step out of the car.
No, you don't have the right.
Step out of the car.
You do not have the right to do that.
I do have the right. Now step out or I will remove you. Get out of the car!
And then you
I will light you up. Get out!
Wow.
Now!
Wow.
Get out of the car!
For a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for a
failure. Get over there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let's take this to court.
Yeah, get over there out of view of the dash cam.
It's tense to watch. Where would you...
Oh, poor Elizabeth Hasselbeck. It was tense for her to watch that. Of course, something like that will never happen to Elizabeth Hasselbeck, A, because she's pretty wealthy, and B, because she's, despite I don't know if it's a natural tan or if she gets it from a bulb or a spray gun, but no, there's nobody's going to mistake her for Sandra Bland. But it's tense for her to watch.
You say he went over the line, if at all?
Well, his own department, obviously, put him on administrative duty. So they have already recognized that he stepped over the line. When you take somebody out of court, that has to be that you feel that your own personal safety is in danger. It appears, obviously, he took this too personal. When she didn't put out the cigarette, now all of a sudden you're taking her out of court. These cameras that the officers are wearing, you live and die by what you say with this. It appears...
You know who else hated cigarettes? I'm sorry, the lottery's over this evening.
Looking at this, because she didn't put out the cigarette, next thing he knows, he's asking the person to step out of the vehicle. You can't take it personal. It's a job.
But what if? I mean, there are times...
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Strap in. Strap in. Get ready. Get ready. Get ready.
Because she didn't put out the cigarette, next thing he knows, he's asking the person to step out of the vehicle. You can't take it personal. It's a job.
But what if? I mean, there are times, I'm sure, someone has, in the history of this land, used a cigarette against a police officer, maybe chucked it at him, pushed it at him.
Absolutely.
If he indeed felt as though that could be a potential threat, was that the wise thing to do on his part?
I think because you know and you have to know you're being recorded, you have to say, listen, I need you to step out to sign this warning. I wouldn't want somebody stepping out with a cigarette. I mean, I've had somebody try to put a cigarette out on me. It happens. I guarantee you speak to many cops out there, but the way you say it, unfortunately, you're locked into it because now it's being recorded. Unfortunately, these officers have to remember that.
Oh, did you get that from our former officer there at the NYPD? Yeah, unfortunately, this is being recorded. You know, because back, when America was still a great country, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, You know, we didn't record the police when they was telling you to put out your cigarette. Unfortunately, this was recorded. Yeah, unfortunately. The goddess of irony never sleeps, not even a catnap. Unfortunately, this was recorded. It's all over the place. By the way, and just in case you're wondering, that lynched slave doll at the Adams Mart, yeah, that ain't the Super 8 Motel. That's the Adams Mart. I mean, we're talking about $300 a night rooms there. You know, they've actually still got a bar on the premises, probably. Yeah, maybe you can even get, like, a shirt cleaned or something. So it's not just your average rube out there doing something racist and stupid. This was somebody with a pretty decent, probably, you know, hotel service industry job that lynched the doll as a mockery of Sandra Bland. Yeah. Oh, let's run over to the phones and see what Jim's thinking. Hey, Jim.
Hello, how are you doing?
Well enough, I think. How about you?
Oh, reasonably well, I guess. I've been listening to some of your comments about this unfortunate situation in which this lady was dragged out of her car. I don't think I have to make any comment about that.
I don't really know what there is to say.
No, there isn't. I mean, I had one encounter with the police like that back in my wilder days, and was practically yanked out of a car because this particular officer was irate, and he was, let me put it this way, he was less than polite and less than gentle. I did learn from that lesson, however, if you're ever stopped by these people, don't give them any cause to do anything that would even encourage them to exceed their authority or perceived authority. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you can watch that video 100 times, and I'm hard-pressed to see where she does that.
Well, she did.
In his mind, I guess.
In his mind, she did. And
but in his mind, she may well have done it by simply having the color of skin that she had from the instant that he noticed it.
Well,
I mean, that's a very real possibility in this country, Jim.
Definitely a possibility, yes, of course. And one has to be very careful in dealing with police officers in any kind of situation, because you never know who you're going to run into and what type of mindset of which that particular officer is possessed. That's all I can say. It was, for me, disturbing. It wasn't right. And, of course, the ultimate outcome is absolutely untenable, unacceptable, and wrong. That's just my personal opinion, and I can say no more about that. Pursuant to your earlier remarks about Mr. Huckabee, or whatever you want to call him, I just call him by the name I know him by, and his comparison to our president, to Adolf Hitler, I think his remarks were extremely dangerous and criminally stupid And if you really want to understand the mindset of people who want to make comparisons and call our president what he
I mean, do you agree that that is what he was doing?
Well, I mean, I can't undo his words, and he was given the opportunity to recant and to say, you know, I may have spoken excessively, I may have been wrong, I may have anything. He was given ample opportunity to recant his remarks, but he refused to do so, which to me means that all these thoughts are very well entrenched in his own mind and psyche.
And but I mean, as a long time knower of words, though, Jim, I can't read his words, which were accurately transcribed by the people over at that website that rhymes with light and fart. I can't read his words without understanding them to be precisely what they are, that he made a direct one-to-one comparison between Adolf Hitler and Barack Obama.
Well, let me suggest this to you, if I may, okay, and to your listeners, if they will. And if those people within the sound of my voice and yours will go to their computers and print out an 11-page document. It's in New Courier type when it comes out in most cases. And I suggest New Courier because it's easier to read, at least it is for me. And it is a document called the Vance Protocol.
I've read it.
But you need to print it out. You don't need to just read it online. You need to print it out and take it back to wherever you sit back and peruse things and read the elements of that document. And if you do so, and if you look into the minutes of that particular meeting held on January 20th, 1942, you will see the roots of so many things that have been discussed on this program and the results of its implementation. We've talked about this before, a long time ago, but I would suggest that anyone who's interested would please print that document out. Just don't read it online. Print it out. Staple it and let it set for a bit and just read it and see what these people were saying in that document and try to compare that document to our current president.
Or to, for that matter, to an agreement with Iran attempting to forestall the production of nuclear weapons?
Well, that's a very sticky question with Iran and what they're going to do. And I hope that they are indeed sincere. And God knows, we don't need to have any type of situation in that in the Middle East. But who knows? I mean, all the rules have changed ever since 2003, and what's happened in the Middle East has just become a complete, alchemist dream of what anybody could concoct or whatever people will do.
Well, do you agree that both Mika Brzezinski and Mike Huckabee got it wrong with the march to the ovens business?
Yes, I do, because our president is not Adolf Hitler.
Well, no, I mean, if you're going to work that analogy, Jim, what I'm getting at is it's the gassing, it's the Zyklon B, it's the showers.
I understand that. I understand it all too well. No, I think that these people are wrong in making that comparison. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who can construe from the remarks being said and the comparisons being made who will simply say, oh yeah, I believe he's right. And they won't think of another thing about it.
Right, because this country is woefully deficient in anything resembling a knowledge of, or a learning, or God knows, understanding of history.
Well, that's been my point many, many, many times when speaking to you on this program. And unfortunately, this type of remark and these type of remarks and these people who follow them don't possess that knowledge of history and its ramifications and what people have been done to as a result of that type of, well, it's just totally inflammatory and irresponsible and dangerous, as I said before. They need to really understand that. And, you know, you have to dig back through a couple decades and then make some comparisons between then and now. And you really need to understand that, I guess, and I'm not trying to repeat what Jim Jones had in Guyana, but he did have one thing over his place there. God knows that those people who do not understand the lessons of history are bound to repeat them. It was odd that a man that crazy would at least have enough sense enough to put that up over there. Of course, you know how charismatic he was, too, with a lot of people. We'll see what happened to them. And I'm just trying to emphasize what I said earlier about that earlier document, and I would urge your listener to just print it out. And if you go within the interior of the document and look at the racial elements of it, and that's very important, that's organic, and you will see what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I mean, you really need to reread that thing. That's the reason. I mean, to read something online is one thing. You go through and you whistle through. But when you have a piece of paper in your hand and you can turn it back and say, well, what does it say? And then go back, it's a lot easier to take a piece of paper. As outmoded as that may seem to a lot of people. And then really get into the organic elements of the minutes of that particular meeting and the effect that it had upon world history and a number of people. I mean, that document can be applied to any number of elements of nationalities besides, you know, the Jews, and it can...
And the other people who were targeted by that regime, sure. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it stands now as a template that you can use. It is, to me. It always has been.
Right, but I think the larger, maybe larger is not the right word, Jim. The larger issue, I'm going to stick with it, is that A, he's getting away with it, Huckabee.
Mm-hmm.
And B, even the people who are trying to call him out on it aren't calling him out on the really essential nastiness of what he did. I mean, it's nasty to make that comparison in any particular way, but to state that the President of the United States is going to personally march an entire nation to its doom, its deliberate murder, is so odious as to be almost indescribable. And that's what he's doing, and that's what most people are just letting blow by, because, you know, like I said, the right wing's been doing it for 7 years, and, you know, that's what they do. But you know what? If Jim did that at the grocery store, or if I did that down at the Rippy Mart, well, maybe not around here, but you get the idea. It would immediately be noticed for how howlingly, viciously hateful that it is. But because it's a Republican saying it, and because they're simply competing for Miss Incongeniality in the upcoming the GOP presidential pageant, well, you know, I mean, they got to say outrageous things to get the notice of the press and you know, to get their poll numbers to go up enough, because only the top 10 get in. And I don't understand. I mean, we give it a pass. And this,
well,
as far as I know, this aspect of it is being given a pass.
Well, I've never given it a pass. I don't give remarks like that a pass. And going back to this document, Vontae Protocol, I'm going to add one more thing to it. If you don't understand it, having read it, just get the DVD called Conspiracy. Well done. Kenneth Branagh, Stanley Tucci, and it will, for an hour and a half, give you a very accurate description of the meeting that produced that document. You will not be able to stop it once it starts, because you will be so appalled that people could sit around a table and create a template that has long survived 1942, and it's being applied by people today in their own minds, some knowingly, some wittingly, some willingly, and some not so knowingly and not so wittingly and not so willingly. I'm not trying to repeat myself here or take up your time, but I just wanted to make that statement. Of course, this man has compared our president to the greatest mass murderer in history.
I understand. Jim, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, you take care, and you have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And, I mean, tell me, am I off base in this? Will. Will is in the chat room. Will from Chicago. We talked about this briefly just toward the very end of the program last night. And it's heinous all by itself. But I swear, it feels to me like he's getting Huckabee is getting a pass on calling President Obama Hitler. Because first and foremost, that was the intent of what he did. And maybe, I mean, send the links if you want to by email, if they're out there. Huckabee calls Obama Hitler. I mean, I watch my Facebook feed. I go to various and sundry sites all day long. I'm not seeing that. But that is what he did. And you'd think that would be a problem. I mean, our buddy Michael in Madison posted something earlier today, and I'm grateful when I get a straight up, no holds barred belly laugh on any given day, because it's healthy. This particular belly laugh, and I realize in describing video we're dancing about architecture here, but whatever. This particular video was a video, it was a vine of Barack Obama with a plate of cookies and a glass of milk. I don't know how old it was, I'd just never seen it before. And, you know, because vines have to be very quick, they have to make their point right then, because then it's gone. Barack Obama picks up the cookie and tries to dip it in his glass of milk. Now, of course, as is often the case with cookies, the cookie was bigger than the diameter of the glass. And so he tried it one way, and he turned the cookie in the other direction and tried it the other way, and then just said, thanks, Obama. So you know that the folks in the White House are in on the joke. I posited that it's probably muttered all over Washington, not the least of, you know, it's probably, you know, Michelle chips a nail, thanks, Obama. Malia gets a B instead of an A, thanks, Obama. John Boehner cuts his lip on the screw top of his wine bottle, thanks, Obama. You get the idea. It's funny. But it's funny because it is a self-deprecatory take on what the right wing's been doing for 7 years. And the viciousness has gone to a new level. I mean, I was around. I was an adult for the 8 years of Bill Clinton. And it got pretty ugly. But not like this. Not like this. Particularly because the election of Barack Obama has done something to the absolute worst lizard brain parts of the right wing. It's brought out the worst in them. Let's see. White dude with Confederate flags in his pickup truck, who stopped in what was described as a predominantly black neighborhood in Indiana with his devil's diaper, treason rags, got his ass shot. Now he's alive, don't worry. But then also, relative to the Confederate battle rag, a bunch of some men in Georgia with Confederate treason flags in their truck actually interrupted a child's birthday party in Douglasville, Georgia this past weekend. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution story shows the aftermath with police officers restraining people of color attending a child's birthday party while white men in their trucks with their Confederate treason rags drive by screaming at them. Things like, we gonna kill y'all. You know the word. I don't like to use it. On a Facebook post, one of the witnesses said, I don't mind them riding with their flags, but I don't want them going around threatening people in their yard like they did mine or harassing other folks. Douglasville Police Chief Chris Womack told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution his department would release details about the incident later on Monday. Because, of course, Georgistan doesn't have any hate crimes law, I don't reckon. You know how it works, right? I mean, we're going to ask them not to do that no more. Pretty pleased with some sugar on it. You see. it's all it's all over the damn place. Let's see. And by the way, one line's open. The other line I'm going to in just a moment here. 304-574-8178 is open if you want to get in. Enter. Enter Jim Hoft, who is a jackass. He is, of course, a right winger. And he runs something called Progressives Today in order to, I don't know, keep track of what those wacky progressives, those wacky commies are up to. And he's decided, Jim Hoft has, that Donald Trump is a victim of, I kid you not, bite down on the hockey puck if you need, racism. The same people who say it's racist to make fun of nappy-headed blacks also make fun of Donald Trump's hair for sport. I have yet to see any actual verified empirical evidence that it's hair. But no, you've got it right. That's it. It's racist to take note of that thing on Donald Trump's head. Now, granted, there isn't 400 plus years of various and sundry remarks about a given ethnicity's hair in regard to Donald Trump, but still, I mean. They're butt hurt, right? Yeah. Oh, by the way, before I go to the phone, by the way, I had a note from Jay Cruzen. He says all the shirts, all the Bernie shirts, have now finally been shipped. I guess the folks at the Bernie store are just swamped. He said, offer my apologies, please, for how long they've taken, but all four have shipped now, so the last four remaining have shipped. So hopefully you'll be getting yours soon. All right, let's run over to the stress line and see what Jim's up to down in Louisiana, Stan. I trust the brain-eating amoebas have not gotten you yet, Jim.
No, yeah, I keep on dodging them. And with the help of the non-existent Scotch Duke, it will continue. Well, thank Jay Cruzen for getting my shirt. Well, I mean, couldn't, like I told you, I was almost poetic or getting it right the day before.
Yeah, that worked out nice.
Shirt. Yeah. And I just turned on your show. I just got off my big time gig. But from what I understand, who is it? The former governor of Atlanta, Georgia. Is that what it was?
Who? Huckabee?
Huckabee.
No, governor of Arkansas.
Arkansas. I'm sorry. He made some sort of idiotic comment. I mean, the thing about that is, and I'll listen to rebroad and figure out, I'll find out what idiotic thing he said. But the thing is, The thing about Republicans, man, when they out of, particularly with this president, you know, and I know, and the whole corn audience knows why it is, because his pigment is a little bit darker than, you know.
Yeah, than a brown paper bag, right.
Yeah, yeah. But the disrespect is just outrageous. And, you know, and considering what the Republicans, the GOP, have done when they're in office, and what they've done to the American people, and it's to a great extent their fault being so stupid and falling for it. And they could easily fall for it again. And, you know, with me, it's definitely Bernie. You know, if he doesn't get it, I guess I got to vote for Hillary, but I won't be happy. But like I was saying, even when Clinton was in office, just the way they, quote unquote, treat the office, they're not in it. It seems like they can do whatever the hell they want. It's all right, but, you know, whenever a Democrat is in the office, it's no holds barred. I mean, did you notice that? I'm not trying to snick. I think.
Oh, no. I think you're right. You're right there.
Yeah, and then their side, and yeah, a lot of Republicans are pretty vicious.
Pretty?
Really?
Pretty? We get an adjective in front of it. Yeah, they're vicious. They're hateful. They're hateful. I mean, with Huckabee, you know, this isn't. I'm troubled because it's almost like there's some sort of comparative continuum of awfulness that Republicans are engaged in plumbing now, Jim. And by that I mean, okay, so Donald Trump says Mexicans are rapists. So Mike Huckabee has to come up with something more awful. And so we determined that a Holocaust reference is more awful than saying Mexicans are rapists. Well, I'm afraid of what comes next, Jim.
Right. And the another thing on that, I just thought of it, is just like a large segment of Republicans or born-again Christians and Christians, and yet they don't see anything wrong with your so-called Christian leaders acting so obscene. You know, it's just, I should be used to it, but it still kind of just kind of floors me. And like we were talking yesterday, kind of going to the little burn. That's why I just hope somehow Bernie can get in with the majority in both the House and Senate. I know the House is almost impossible. But basically, it was what Bernie was talking about the other night, where you basically have to have a large turnout, you have to get people motivated. And, you know, because from my opinion, you know, this, I don't think we got too many more chances. Man. I mean, we're already on the road to autocracy, corporatism. We're already there, practically.
Oh, I don't think there's any practically about it. We're there.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be optimistic. See, if you notice, I'm not as optimistic as I was yesterday. The glow is kind of wearing off. But, you know, and then you try and explain it to people. Even though they get screwed over at their jobs and whatnot, and just the statistics that come out, people having to work two jobs, and then like here in Louisiana, Stan, you can't even get a lot of jobs done full time. Everything's part time. And somebody, well, that's Obama's fault. I'm like, don't give me that shit. They've been going that way ever since in 1980. It started with, seems to me. I mean, it really got bad in the last 8 years, or maybe 12 or whatever. But unless they need you, absolutely need you, and then they're doing everything they can to make sure you don't get over a certain amount of hours so you don't qualify for benefits. You know. I mean, it's, and yet people are working jobs, but they don't see it, so they end up working two or three jobs. You know, it's just like that, that fucking asshole George Bush shitting when that lady says, well, I'm working three jobs. And that,
that's uniquely American.
Yeah, he thought he was clever or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
And then there's his
dipshit baby brother who thinks Americans aren't working hard enough. But by God, he did an interview speaking the Spanish, and that means he's not like the rest of the racist Republicans. See that I don't know if you saw that today or not, Jim, but that's the angle. So Jeb can't figure out anything nastier to say than Huckabee did. So he did something that would garner the for-profit media's attention by speaking Spanish in an interview with Univision and MSNBC's Jose Diaz-Balart. And so he spoke the Spanish, which, and I want to be clear about this, to a certain segment of right-wing America is worse than a Holocaust comparison because he's speaking the Mexican. And that, oh, but see, that proves that Jebby, Jim, has the smartest campaigners, okay? Because what that was designed to do was to get Trump to come out and say something about who wants a president who can talk Mexican, because they're rapists. See, it's wrestling. It's, I mean, you know what I mean. I mean, you grew up in the same general region as I did. It's wrestling down to the National Guard Armory on the Saturday night, and the red masked Marvel is going to beat the blue masked Marauder, and then next Saturday night it'll be the other way. It's a con.
Yeah. Oh, sure, I know. I mean, but there's one of the cockles in my heart that Jeff tried to reach Hispanic Americans. Those of them Latin descent by speaking Espanol, maybe they'll really glom on to him or something. I hope not, but I gotta catch exactly what Huckabee said. I catch on your show.
Well, basically, essentially, Jim, he said that Barack Obama is the same as Adolf Hitler, and by signing an agreement with Iran, that he's marching Israel to the oven doors. That was the line, the oven doors.
I heard that. To me, that's just stupid. Such an idiotic, asinine comment, because I think that's a pretty sweet deal, what he did overall. And the weird thing is, if a Republican had done it, they'd be singing praise. They'd be dancing in the streets about it. You know, I've noticed that. It's just like anything he does, they've got to paint a bad picture on it. I mean, Obama. Obama's way to the right of what I am, in my way of thinking what this country needs. But, I mean, he's such a breath of fresh air in comparison to the Republican nutjob. I mean, it's just like I said, if somehow Bernie doesn't get it, I'll have to vote Hillary. When he was the runoff for Mary Landrieu's seat, I didn't bother vote. I voted for first. And I just said, screw it. I understand why she couldn't be her spokesman.
Right. Well, she couldn't because, I mean, the short answer, she couldn't do it because money and politics, okay?
She could not
afford to offend her patrons, but her patrons had already turned on her by then, and she couldn't figure that out and just on the way out the door deliver a Parthian shot.
Yeah, and maybe part of the DNC or DCCC or something, you know?
She's not going to be eating rice and beans.
Oh, I know that. Yeah.
And until the end of her days, she will be referred to down in your neck of the woods as Senator. Senator, good morning, Senator. Good afternoon, Senator. Good evening, Senator. How is the Senator this evening? I don't do the accent down there at all well, but you get the idea.
Oh, I know.
See, I need to hang out down there in the New Orleans
bayou area and pick that accent up. That's what I need.
Hurry up, because I'm probably leaving in a relatively short while.
Oh, where next?
Probably back to Vegas.
Wow, okay.
I just figure if I can make it up there, last those 15 or 20 years, if it doesn't go dry, I mean, I remember Malloy had a report a month or two ago about just how low the water is in that area, because Nevada is right next to California, and that whole area is experiencing drought. I'm sure that's not climate change. I'm sure that's just the way Jesus wants it. But I guess maybe if Huckabee would get out there and do some prayer. Is he like one of those? What exactly is this? Is he like the? He doesn't talk in tongues. Does Huckabee talk in tongues?
Oh no, he's once upon a time. I mean, he's a respectable evangelical gunman. He's a Southern Baptist. The Episcopals refer to themselves as the Frozen Chosen. The Baptists are like that. I mean, in my Southern Baptist church where I grew up, we had one deacon who was allowed to say amen once a sermon. Amen. And that was as noisy as we got.
Well,
I mean, back then, and I don't think now they do either. You know, Southern Baptists don't do that. Put your hands in the air and sway back and forth like you're at a Bay City Rollers concert. Southern Baptists don't do that. They sit there and they quietly wait and hope the hell the preacher finishes up, because they want to beat the Church of Christ to the cafeteria line.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of this guy. You probably met. He's got like salty pepper hair, and he'll just be talk, you know, speaking along, and then just
sure. And then he said, "I love you." Yeah. Tilton?
I can't remember. I can't think of his name, but I mean, I've seen it, and that's just the mere fact that he can do that is pretty impressive. But I mean, I don't buy into that crap anyway, so. But it is kind of amusing for a couple of minutes or two, you know. But I think it's Tilton. Down in Dallas?
Probably, yeah. I'm trying to find out here. Wait. Okay, I think let's see if this is him. Hold on. This might work.
Something called a Moshoko Domazata, Lata Totomoton Deutiki, Shakala Kapoko, Potokalakam.
No, I want to get the whole thing. You're hearing this, right, Jim?
Yeah, I think it might.
Yeah, this is him. This is him, Robert Tilton. God, we needed a giggle tonight. Thank you so much. Here we go.
Isn't that something called a Moshoko Domazata, Lata Totomoton Deutiki, Shakala Kapoko, Potokalakamashiti? I love you.
Is that the guy?
What's so great about? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's him. But what's so great about that is, I wonder what. He's sitting in the audience. You can say you believe that. Now, what do they think? They understand it, or
Well, that's why the Holy Spirit sends the spirit of comprehension.
I wonder if you could go back to him after this. Well, it's really great the Spirit was talking to you, but I didn't understand what the fuck he was saying. But I guess that's why.
I love that. But you know what? I need to grab that clip. That just needs to be part of the rotation.
Thanks, man. I'm glad one of my suggestions is worthy of Bobness.
Oh, it's most Bob worthy.
So, right, I'm going to let you go, let you talk to some other people. Yeah, but, it doesn't surprise me, but this is so mean and fucking nasty.
Yes, and they are. They are, and it's all bubbled to the surface of their personal their personal id-driven swamps. Beginning on January 20th, 2009. I mean, that's when they started hollering about. Take our country back.
Yeah.
They weren't hollering take our country back during Bill Clinton, because you know Bill was at least. I mean, they joked around about it being our first black president and everything. All white people knew that wasn't really true. He's a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, for God's sakes. The flag is falling.
It's incredible. And, you know, forget trying to talk to him. So let you go, and I'll let you, let somebody else get through. Talk to you later.
All right, sounds good, Jim. Take care. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana. Stan, both lines open if you want to jump in. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the stress line, followed by or accompanied by 304-574-8178, the ubiquitously named other line. We used to call it the Skype line, but it confuses people. And then there's Skype, you know, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. I love you. Yeah, absolutely. And let's see, just a gentle reminder, we're still waiting for somebody to get out there and jine up with Glenn from New York so that we won't have a great big monumental hole to try to dig ourselves out of for prayer meeting Wednesday, even though it's prayer meeting Wednesday. We're still trying to raise $190 to finish the evening's fundraising and advance the ever-present cause of bill paying here at the Horn. Oh, my goodness gracious, two nights in a row? How could it be? It's Ron up in Canada.
It's Ron.
What's happening?
I just called in to be a contrarian this evening.
Oh, no. Are we going to fight?
No, we're not going to fight.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Just going to express a different point of view. Personally, I am having a great deal of enjoyment watching the Republicans just circle the wagons, dig holes, and bury themselves.
Oh, it's fun. I said, I'm going to be glued to the screen when that first pageant comes around.
I think I mentioned earlier in a note to you that I was able to watch about 20 minutes of the five this evening.
Oh, no.
And Fox is so desperate. They think Perry is outstanding and brilliant, and his polling numbers suck. And he may well end up in the kids' table during the debates. So he was the opening guest on Fox, and he was still on 20 minutes later when I left, had his glasses on, looking very mellow and erudite. And I'm surprised that, you know, he didn't come down from a sugar high from all the compliments that were being paid to him. And to my mind, it was an example of Fox attempting to manipulate the agenda that they've established.
Oh, trying to sort of tweak him up into the top 10, right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, I'm sure he had his smart glasses on, but one of the few things that I agree with Donald Trump on is that smart glasses, relative to Rick Perry, you know, they ain't working.
Yeah, lipstick doesn't work on pigs either. But it was just such a blatant use of the media for a political purpose, fair and balanced, of course. But I'm just enjoying the hell out of, you know, watching these guys crucify each other.
And, oh, if only.
Yeah, and keep knocking their rungs out of the ladder, because when they're left, somebody will figure out a way to suck Jeb Bush down the toilet with them. They'll get him to say something right up there with the, you know, the basic Mensa capabilities of the Bush family. And
look, speaking in Spanish to Jose Diaz-Balart may very well be enough to sink him. I mean, you may not remember, but, well, I know you know who G. Gordon Liddy is.
Yeah, he was the guy that could hold his hand over a candle.
Right, and swore that he would kill his own grandmother for Richard Nixon, or was that G. Gordon Liddy? I mean, or was that Chuck Colson? But anyway, no, you know, he had a radio show many years ago. I don't know if he still does. He hit the apex of his career when he advised right-wing militias to always aim for the head of federal agents so as not to be stymied by the bulletproof vest, the body armor. But along the way, he also said once that he did not want his children, and you know, this is 15 years ago, at least, maybe 10, but he didn't want his children learning Spanish in school because he didn't want them to learn to speak illegal immigrant. Now, this is, you know, this is something that's been alive and well. I mean, Kevin D. Williamson, that idiot that we started the program with, seems to think that xenophobia is something that that is infecting and infesting the progressive left in this country. You know, what left, please? But the fact of the matter is, xenophobia is it's not a flaw. It's a feature of the right wing in this country. And Jeb Bush speaking the Mexican is, well, I mean, I saw polling data a while back, Ron, that said 48% of likely Republican voters said that there was no way in hell, no way, can't make me, that they would ever vote for Jeb Bush or any other Bush. Well, that's only, you know, him speaking the Mexican is only going to make that number go higher.
That's because he's married to one of them immigrants, isn't he?
Well, yes, he is. It really is brilliant strategery, to use one of his brother's words, because hopefully this will elicit a response from Trump, which will then get them into one of those downward spiraling scum fights, which will drive, they hope, Bush's numbers up and Trump's numbers down. Because Bush is very, you know, Jebbia is very offended at not being number one. He's supposed to be number one, damn it. But he finds himself in the unenviable position of being 2016's Willard Romney, the guy the Republicans didn't want to nominate until they were absolutely forced to.
Yeah, I see where Jeb and Cruz, Rubio, and Walker have been summoned to a meeting with the Koch brothers in California.
Really?
Yeah.
Here's hoping they don't get sent out if any of them get sent out in a rowboat, you know what's going to happen. We've seen the movie.
Oh, we could have fantasies about them all being on the same plane.
Ah, they're not that silly though. They'll split it up. They'll at least make Chuck and Dave work for it. Now, who was it? It's Jebbia and who?
Bush, Jebbia, Cruz, Rubio, and Walker.
That's interesting.
It is.
Because you've got three Hispanic connections and one upper Midwest palatable to the right-wing base white guy.
One pure white Republican, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
One good Aryan.
Wouldn't it be a hoot if he dyed his hair blonde?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to say his hair blonde after that. Oh, God, I'm evil tonight.
Yeah. By the way, I mentioned to Carol earlier that for the choice of music tonight, I thought that an absolutely perfect song would have been Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed.
Oh, that would have been nice.
Yeah. It's not enough for the hit list on, you know, the Bob Top 10. It's got a good beat and you can dance to it sort of thing. But occasionally I dig it out and listen to it. It's a pretty nice piece of music. That and The Girl with the Faraway Eyes. That one appeals to me for some reason. We're digressing here and I don't mind. But
well, that's okay. Our mutual friend in Hooterville has noted that in the downward spiral of the GOP, all Carly Fiorina has to do is have a wardrobe malfunction, show a little skin, and she's in. although is this true? I heard from Carol earlier that Donald Trump has said that that Godzilla from Wasilla, he'd love to have her in his cabinet because she's special.
Was that an appeal to the autistic vote? She's special. I mean, she's denser than diamonds. So, you know, maybe you could get along
with
her.
Yeah, denser than U-238.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that would be even more entertaining than McCain and Palin, though. For a third-party candidate? Ooh. That would probably
be. And see, that's where my heart lies. I want Donald Trump to run as a third party candidate.
That's the stuff wet dreams are made of, though, Bob. It would, I mean, Republicans would have him assassinated, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know if we're allowed to say that, but.
No, I mean, those guys would achieve orbit if he decided to run a third-party campaign.
And again, I mean, I'm just coming from that same place you said you're in.
Yeah.
Where you just you pop the popcorn and you sit back and you bring the paper towels to make sure your hands don't get too greasy with the butter, but you just sit back and watch and have a blast. I mean, we can't eat popcorn at the movie theaters anymore because we can't go to the movie theater because we might get Second Amendmented.
Well, the NRA, I think it might have been the Onion, they announced that the NRA said the solution to stopping the theater killings was to ban movies.
Well, there you go. Oh, by the way, a little update on the summoning by the Kochs.
Yep.
Irish Dave pointed out, he said, I read that Ayn Rand, you know, Rand Paul and that thing on his head, turned down his chance to suck up to the Kochs. So that may be his bit. I'm not enthralled to the Koch brothers, but did you see his attempt at getting a little bit of attention via a shtick? He set fire and chainsawed and wood chippered the federal tax code.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's been watching Joe Manchin commercials, Ron. Remember, Joe Manchin assassinated the cap and trade bill, tacked it to a tree, and then just blew the poor thing away.
Yeah.
And he did it in November of one year, not too far distant from the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. I thought that showed real panache.
And
that was edgy.
But I'm simply suggesting that people can remove a lot of the angst of all of this if they view the entire Republican primary process as entertainment.
Well, and at the very least, it's a reality show now, isn't it?
Yeah. But if you view it as entertainment, it saves heartburn. And you can just, as you say, get the popcorn and the napkins to make sure your fingers don't get too greasy from the slime and just enjoy the show. Eventually, somebody's going to be the top dog. Probably the equivalent of a beagle, but it's going to be the top dog. And it's just going to be fascinating to watch. And with that...
At least you didn't say Mexican hairless.
You know me too well, Bob. You know that crossed my mind.
Well, I mean, I'm just channeling the filter, just you know, surfing.
Okay.
Just surfing the right. And I mean, it is. You're right. It's a reality show. Who wants to be a president? Who wants to be a nominee?
Yep.
Because are we harboring? And I know we've moved on to dangerous ground here, Ron. Before you go. But are we operating under the suspicion that ain't none of those people could ever be president of the United States?
I think we are. I think it's a fallacy. One of them might be, but I hope not. I can't do anything about it from here. But
because see, what scares the bejesus out of me is this. We have a system that doesn't, I mean, we have a two-party system. I mean, this is what I, you know, you can't get anywhere trying to explain this to, you know, like a Jill Stein voter or whatever. Two-party systems, such as ours, are always two-party systems. When the Republicans replaced the Whigs, it didn't mean that there was a three-party system. It meant that the Whigs were gone and the Republicans were in. It's a two-party system. And so that means that whoever gets the nomination, whether it's Chris Christie or Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, or Scott Walker, whatever, they've got a coin toss chance in this country we have down here that is comprised of voting machine tabulators with less security than a goddamn video game. They got a coin toss chance of becoming president of the United States. So for all those people out there saying, nah, Trump couldn't never be president, or nah, you know, Mike Huckabee couldn't never be president, it could be. And that's my only caveat to the to your theory of sitting back and enjoying the popcorn.
But Richard Nixon could never be president. I remember people saying that.
And there you I was here in 2000. I was around. Oh, really? That Bush? Well, he's dumber in the head and the hog is in the ass. Ain't no way the American people would let a fool like that be president. And there you go.
And then they reelected the prick.
Well, I don't think we elected him or reelected him, but I'm funny that way. But, you know, it was close. Again, it was that coin toss chance. It was close enough to throw it to the Supreme Court.
Well, the only other, two comments. First of all, when I moved to Canada, it took me 10 years to get my head around the parliamentary system. They do what? Well, that's just dumb. And understand it. It's been manipulated a bit over the last few years from a conservative party up here that's watching too much U.S. politics and Karl Rove. But basically speaking, it's a much more balanced system. It could be improved a bit, but proportional voting would help, so that you end up with a parliament that if 35% of the people vote for the new Democratic Party and 37% vote for the Liberals and 38% vote for the Conservatives, that roughly reflects the representation of members of parliament down the road. It may be a while before we get there, but there are certainly some moves in that direction. And the second thing I would note is we got an election coming up sometime this fall. We know that for sure. And you know how long our official election cycle is?
What, 6 weeks tops?
Minimum 37 days. And I think the max is somewhere around 45 or 48. And there's strict spending limits on how much.
See, that just goes to show that you're living in a totalitarian nightmare world, Ron.
I know. We get so little time. I mean, they're stealing my entertainment away from me.
I mean, you don't even have freedom. You realize that, right? I'll bet you go to the grocery store in Canada. It ain't nothing but cornflakes, is it? You don't have 29 different kinds of breakfast cereal to choose from. I mean, it's like poutine in a box or nothing, right? No freedom.
It's just a box that says cornflakes.
Yeah.
And
don't even get American bacon. You got to eat that weird Canadian bacon stuff.
Yeah. And we get the cold fronts first and get to test them out before we export them.
Yeah, see, you're living. God, this is like a call.
It's a nightmare.
It's like a call from North Korea.
But I will comment more.
People's Democratic Republic of Canada.
Yeah, can understand. But as we get closer to the election, I'm going to be noting for the listeners more information about how strict the spending limits are on campaign financing, and it is something. It's going to be mind-boggling to the basic American who understands how things are now funded down there. Our entire campaign may end up with the three combined parties that are running spending less than $75 million total.
Yeah. Wow.
Just so. And at the end of the day, we end up with a government that's no less fucked up than yours, but it was cheaper to get it.
Well, yeah, cheaper to get it. And, I mean, you know, granted, they occasionally do things like pillage 200 years of cultural and anthropological research and set fire to it and throw it in dumpsters and stuff. But, I mean, yeah. It's not like that doesn't happen here. Yeah.
And every couple of hundred years, we get pissed off and invade our neighbors. Yeah, no. We're about due for that again.
Well, I'm not going to help. Nope.
Well, we can bring Cuban cigars.
Well, that would, you know, make it an invasion of one. You know, Cuban cigars and a nice bottle of Havana Club, and, you know, then we'll start the peace talks.
Havana Club Reservo?
Añejo.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to remember that. I'm getting older now. It's hard to remember this stuff. But anyway, I'm going to let you go and maybe raise some money.
That would be mighty helpful because, yeah, the hole is about $190 this evening. With 10 minutes to go.
Got a long shovel.
Yeah, long way to go and short time to get there, what Jerry Reed said. Ron, have a good one, man.
You take care, sir.
All right, bye now. From the People's Democratic Republic of Canada, the unfreedom hellhole. Because, you know, they don't have Citizens United up there. Yeah. Both lines open. If you want to knock out the last 9 minutes of the program in conversation, that's fine. 304-663-4676 and 304-574-8178. Jump right in, if you are so inclined. Yeah, really, 19 at 10, 10 at 19, something like that, just to try to close the fundraising hole and pay a couple of bills this evening. That would be a real bonus. You know, I hadn't thought about that. Irish Dave pointing out, you know that El Don, T-Rump, was married to an immigrant. Oh, yeah. And, of course, there's also that. Somebody's team has been doing some oppo research because they found an allegation in somewhere back in T. Rump's past where he was accused of raping his spouse, and his lawyer argued that it is legally impossible for a husband to rape a wife. Oh, we're going to have that conversation again in 2015 and 16. Wonder if it's going to work out the same way it did in 11 and 12. Yeah, and by the way, there was some pushback during the first Jim's conversation. Irish Dave made an observation. He said, you know, when you're stopped by a cop, you know who you're running into. A cop. And by the way, when does don't give him any cause become really just blaming the victim? It's, as another person pointed out, sort of like asking, you know, what was she wearing? And by the way, not to in any way diminish what I presume, I'm treating it as a murder. Homicide, at the very least, of Sandra Bland. But, you know, Angry mentioned something the last time we talked about the fact that on the U.S.-Mexico and the U.S.-Canada border, there are hundreds of missing women cases that are ill
investigated and little mentioned. Well, that brings to mind something that happened earlier this month in South Dakota. And that would be the story of 24-year-old Sarah Lee Circlebear of Claremont, South Dakota. This is one of those say her name moments. Sarah Lee Circlebear, 24 years old, mother of two. She was an activist in Indian Country in South Dakota. She was hauled into jail at the Brown County Jail in Aberdeen, South Dakota, on a bond violation. I don't know the details there. A bond violation. According to witnesses, when she was brought in custody and taken to a holding cell, she told her guards that she was in excruciating pain. That's when the personnel at the jail told her to quit faking, knock it off, and then lifted her partway off the floor and dragged her into the holding cell, and not too long later she was found unconscious. Sarah Sunshine Manning brought the story to light at Indian Country Today. She said, I recently learned about Sarah Lee Circlebear while attending a family ceremonial gathering. A relative set out a memorial chair for Sarah, a tradition of the Dakota and Lakota people. Sarah's story was shared, and the circle prayed for her and her family for 4 days. Her two little boys were aged 1 and 2. Sarah Sunshine Manning, in her piece at Indian Country Today, said, when any person is taken into custody and under the care of law enforcement, it is their right to receive appropriate medical attention and just treatment. This does not appear to be the case with Sarah Lee Circlebear, and in the state of South Dakota, where Native Americans are the largest minority and hate crimes are reported at high levels, it is time to demand a thorough investigation into her neglect and her death. It is time to demand better treatment of Native women and justice for Sarah. And with respect to Sarah Sunshine Manning, we pretend at the idea that people taken into the care, custody, and control of law enforcement are entitled to receive appropriate medical attention and just treatment. That's a lie, okay? In 2015, in the second decade of the 21st century, in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, that is a lie. And for the most part, we treat prisoners, whether they are pre- or post-conviction, like trash. And sometimes they're found hanging by trash bags. After complaining about the excruciating pain she was in, after letting her lay there in the holding cell, once she was found unresponsive, they took her to a nearby hospital, and she died. Say her name. Sarah Lee Circlebear. Back tomorrow with prayer meeting Wednesday. Looks like we're going to be in the way of looking for a miracle. Our fundraising goal tomorrow night will be $390. Thanks for sharing your time this evening. Thanks to all of you who listen, who call, who email, and who do nothing at all but simply share your finite time in this ongoing little community that you have built here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina. Well, it's all for you. Have a good night, everybody.